It's that time on the radio here in Spain where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are we doing today, Bill?
Hi, very well indeed. Thank you, Howard. How are you? I hope you're well.
Yeah, all things considered. What's caught your eye over the past 7 days?
Two or three things. I think everyone's aware that we've got a US election coming up. If you're not aware of it, welcome back from the planet Zog. That will run its course, I guess, through the next 10 or 12 days, and we'll know the decision fairly soon after November the 3rd and see what shenanigans comes thereafter. But of perhaps more importance to our listeners at this moment in time, I mentioned several weeks past how Mr. Frost and Monsieur Barnier have been having close negotiations, and how Downing Street actually walked away from these negotiations, and now they're back dancing around their handbags again in the hope Monsieur Barnier has said that they can get down to discussions on a legal text, which is a great sign because that does mean they're moving forward. And as I've said many times, I'm pretty sure they will eventually come to some form of agreement. The EU and the UK together are very good at creating an essential fudge. Perhaps the most important thing I read this week, and I know that you saw it too, Howard, because we discussed it earlier in the week, was the announcement from the Centre for Policy Studies, which is a sort of a right-wing independent think tank. They have been talking about how to save the UK finances, given the amount of money that's been spent in protecting the UK economy. And one of the key things that will affect our listeners is that there is a proposal in that addressed to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, that they say 2 billion a year would be saved if the triple lock, as it's known, on state pensions was taken away. Now, that is a system by which the state pension goes up by reference to either inflation, earnings, or a 2.5% increase. And that 2.5% has been the fail-safe option for the last few years. And they're suggesting that it's changed to give just a double lock, which means that pensions would rise each year, by whichever was the higher of earnings or inflation, with both of those expected to stay low. That is not good news for the state pension owners, because it will almost certainly mean less increases in pension than would otherwise have been the case. But someone's got to refund all of this money that's been spent in the economy. That's just one of the measures that are being considered.
Well, Bill, we've only 2 months left until the end of the Brexit transition period. Is it worth looking again at residency and freedom of movement issues for UK nationals in Spain? Mm-hmm. So first of all, Bill, can you confirm that nothing should change for British expatriates who are lawfully resident in Spain by the end of this year?
No, I don't think it is going to change. I mean, it's a matter of weeks almost now when the Brexit transition period officially comes to an end on the 31st of December. And UK nationals will, as a consequence, lose what is at the present time an automatic right to come and go in Spain. That's been in place for the last 48 years. But from the 1st of January, only those individuals who have already established lawful Spanish residence or EU citizenship will have unlimited access to the country. So no change is expected before the end of the year. But if you do spend a lot of time in Spain, or indeed you own a Spanish holiday property and enjoy being able to visit when you like, but intend to remain a UK resident, things are about to become much more complicated for those individuals. And similarly, if you're thinking about moving to Spain after the end of 2020, you'll need to jump through a few more hoops than if you were moving before the 31st of December.
Is there still time to sort out residency this year, and what do you have to do?
Yeah, you don't actually, funnily enough, need to be physically present in Spain when the Brexit transition period ends to qualify for residence, but you do have to submit your application to the authorities in person wherever possible. Now, you've actually got, strangely enough, despite the transition period, until the 30th of June 2021 to hand those applications in, but you must be able to demonstrate that you were settled as a Spanish resident before the 31st of December 2020. What constitutes proof of your having been settled here is, of course, as like many things in Spain, open to interpretation. So it's quite risky to depend upon that extension. Much safer to make sure that you have got your documents in place before the end of the year. I certainly wouldn't recommend waiting until after December, Howard, to start the application process, especially as there's already a significant backlog.
Yeah. Do we know how things will work for UK nationals arriving to live in Spain after Brexit? Will it be harder to get residency?
I think as things stand, the immigration rules have not been finalised for non-Spanish resident UK citizens who want to spend time in Spain after Brexit is over. So I remain very confident that Spain is going to continue to welcome British nationals and other foreigners who wish to settle in Spain. But we do need to wait and see what the new requirements will be. I mean, we can only speculate, I guess, at this moment, how I'd like lots of other things until the dots are on the I's and the crosses on the T's on the existing rules for non-EU and non-EEA nationals. While the rules are set to apply if the UK leaves without a deal, it's still possible that the UK and Spain could agree more favourable arrangements during these negotiations. So this really should be considered like a worst case scenario. There's no question that the economic benefit that foreign nationals bring when they settle in Spain is something the Spanish do not want to lose. So whilst the hoops that you have to jump through after the 1st of January, or from the 1st of January, if you are not already settled in Spain, are going to be more difficult, I don't think it's going to be that difficult that it's going to be a problem for anyone who seriously wants to spend the rest of their life retired in Spain.
I remember when I moved to Spain, I had to go to the Spanish embassy in London to get a visa. So I don't think we'll be going back to those, but you never know. You never know.
Well, I think it's going to be simplified, Howard. I think there's going to be a need to obtain a residence permit. You'll do that in the normal way, I guess, by going to the police station. You know, there will be the similar practice that occurred perhaps 15 years ago when you came to Spain to become a resident.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, Bill, many British people continue to live in Spain in the UK, but they have holiday homes in Spain and spend a lot of the time each year here. Now, they're used to being able to go and come as they please, but that's going to change, I guess.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, once the automatic freedom of movement comes to an end, non-Spanish resident UK nationals should still be able to enter Spain, I think, without a visa, but only for relatively short stays. The European Union has agreed to add the UK to its list of visa-exempt countries. That is provided that the UK reciprocates, and I think that's a given. So unless there's an alternative UK-Spain agreement, United Kingdom citizens will be limited to visiting Spain for up to 90 days within any 180-day period without a visa. Now, that 180-day clock would start on the first moment that you enter Spain or any other EU state from 2021 as a non-EU citizen, with each subsequent departure and entry being recorded and counted at border control. So while being away from Spain for a full 90 days would allow a new stay of up to 90 days, once you've used up your allowance, you won't be permitted to enter another EU country without a visa. So those who maintain a UK residency but own a Spanish holiday home will clearly have to be more careful when planning their trips to Spain or, frankly, anywhere else in the EU to avoid illegally overstaying or potentially being denied entry. And also, frankly, being prepared to answer questions at the border about the duration and the purpose of your visit. For stays over 90 days, or if you want the right to work in Spain as a non-EU national, you need to apply in advance. And the conditions which you need to meet for those to be granted are as yet unknown. They will come out in the wash. And if you want to secure unlimited access to Spain by becoming a resident, you're going to need to prove in the future that you can financially support yourself and any dependents without relying on state support. Now, that throughout the EU involves demonstrating a level of income at least equal to the national minimum wage. But this isn't necessarily the case for Spain because the thresholds there are generally decided on a case-by-case basis at the discretion of the Extranjera offices. And that means that the minimum income across Spain region can vary. So it's very difficult to determine. I mean, the sufficient income requirement until recently hasn't always been imposed on UK nationals seeking residence, but certainly it's going to be imposed, I think, from 2021. And it's important to remember that the thresholds for third country nationals are significantly higher, so it will be much easier to satisfy this condition by registering for residence as an EU citizen during 2020 and before the Brexit deadline comes to us on the 31st of December.
Well, what about tax residence? Does this new TIE, if you apply for that, does that mean you'll have to pay all your taxes in Spain?
Look, if you become a tax resident, it's highly likely you will also be deemed to be a tax resident in Spain. So you've got to take care to meet all of your payment and reporting obligations. Spanish taxation, I'm sure none of our listeners need telling, is complex. But the way you hold your wealth and your assets can make a significant difference to your ultimate tax bill. That's why at Blevins Franks, as locally based advisors with cross-border expertise, we've been well-placed to help our clients take advantage of suitable opportunities in Spain, and also because we are on the ball insofar as the Brexit EU negotiations are concerned, we're able to guide you through the necessary steps to protect the individual's position in Spain, both before and after Brexit. It's not exactly now or never for securing access to Spain, but it'll certainly get a lot harder from 2021. So my advice would be to weigh up your options now for making the most of what Spain has to offer. And I think as a consequence of all of that, if you become tax resident in Spain, you'll be governed, of course, by the Spanish, if you're British, UK double tax treaty to ensure you don't pay double taxes on the same income. And indeed, it's better to have advice from someone who understands both the UK and the Spanish system, because often individuals have liabilities, potential liabilities at least, in both jurisdictions. And one of the Blevins Franks skills is to make sure that you end up paying the least possible tax in one or two of the jurisdictions.
So if someone's listening here and they're in that sort of limbo, what should they do if they want to prepare to be paying tax in Spain?
Oh, I think whether you've been in Spain for a very long time or whether you are planning to live in Spain, it doesn't hurt at all at a time like this to sit down and with someone who understands both UK and Spanish taxation, to bring together in a cohesive fashion the manner in which you establish and set up your arrangements so that you are suppressing unnecessary tax down to the lowest possible level, both income tax or capital gains tax. Importantly, trying to move away as far as you can from wealth tax, and certainly starting to plan well in advance for inheritance or succession tax. The last of those taxes, succession and inheritance tax, aren't covered by the double tax treaty. And in that situation, you definitely need professional advice. This is not a DIY function. Tax and the implications of getting it wrong are too significant to take amateur approaches to solving the problem. Blevins Franks, as I say, for 40 years have been giving advice to British expatriates living in Spain. They're very well positioned to make sure that you don't fall liable to taxes unnecessarily.
And the website is a good place to start.
Yeah, I think it is, Howard. I think, you know, it's an extensive website. Funny enough, I've just come off of the website a few minutes ago. I continue to be impressed at the people who look after our website. It's updated regularly. It has lots of information about our tax planning skills, some case studies, even these interviews between us are on there, generally speaking, articles that we've written for the financial and general press. And also, most importantly, the names, addresses and contact details for the local offices close to wherever our listener wishes to make an approach. And I think if you make an approach to sit down and talk to somebody at a Blevins Franks office about where you are now, your concerns about now and where you wish to be in the short, medium term and longer term future, Blevins Franks are perfectly well placed to give you the kind of advice that gets you from here to there in the most effective way possible.
Well, many thanks, Bill. Here in Spain, we'll talk again at the same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Have a great week.